ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिपूजितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वाम् अनुसन्तथामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी.
Chapter 2, verse 70.
Apuryamanam achala pratishtam. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam. Samudramapa pravishanti advata. Samudramapa pravishanti advata. Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve. Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve. Sashantimapnoti nakamakami. Sashantimapnoti nakamakami. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apaha pravishanti yadvat tadvat kamaha yam pravishanti sarve saha shantim apnoti nakamakami.
This is another famous verse, like the verse before, that which is darkness for all beings is daytime for the jnani, etc. This verse also is another one that's often quoted. We'll just take it word by word first. Apuryamanam, that which is brimming full. Pra means to be full, to fill. Apuryamanam is a present participle. That which has become brim, completely full, to the brim. Apuryamanam. Achala pratishtam, that is abiding, steady. Achala means there's no movement. Like, for instance, a river is moving, the waters are moving, going from one place to another. But the ocean is firm, it's in one place, right? So its pratishta, its home, its base, is achala, without any motion, without any movement. So, apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram. So, the samudram, these are adjectives to samudram, the ocean. Okay? So, the ocean, which is completely full by nature and not moving, its pratishta, its base is in one place, it's steady and firm. So, apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram. Apaha, waters, pravishanti, enter, yadvat. Just as yadvat, like yatha, just as the waters enter the ocean, which by its nature is already completely full and not moving. In other words, the waters are all coming in. All the rivers, the river waters, the rains are all coming in. But as they enter, nothing happens to the ocean because the ocean is already completely full and it has nowhere to go, right? It's not like all the rivers are going to come in and move the ocean. Yeah. So the ocean doesn't really increase or decrease. It's just full as it is, and it receives everything that comes to it without itself changing. That's the image. Okay. So apaha is in the nominative plural. Apaha pravishanti. Right? Apaha pravishanti samudram is an accusative. So the Aporiyamanam and Achalapratishtam are in accusative singulars for the taking the Pravishantis, and Yadvat just as. Tadvat, like that, Tadvat, Kamaha, desires. Kama, the word kama means a desire. It also means the object of a desire, right? So you can say the objects. Objects of desire. So kama can mean the desire itself or the object of desire. Okay? So kamaha, just as desires or objects of desires, like that, tadvat, kamaha, yam pravishanti sarve. Sarve, pronoun, nominative plural, sarve kamaha. So all of the desires, pravishanti, they enter yam, whom? Right? So like that, all of the desires enter whom? Saha, that one. Shantim apnoti. That one gains, apnoti, attains, gains, shanti. Shanti's peace. Okay? That one gains peace. Na kamakami. Not the one who is a kamakami. Not the one who has desire for these desirable objects. I want this, I need this in order to be happy. Okay? So the one who is already full. It's a beautiful image, right? So like the ocean, so much is coming into the ocean, but the ocean doesn't need it. It doesn't need the rains to make it full. It doesn't need the rivers to make it full. Like a pond, if it were just a pond, then a pond does need, you know, it needs the rains and the rivers. It needs something to feed it or it'll dry up. Or the rivers can dry up also. You know, if we don't get enough rains, the rivers will dry up. They're subject to drying up. The ocean is not subject to drying up, right? So in fact, the Swamiji talks about this in his Bhasha on this very nicely. The clouds, in fact, to have the clouds have to draw up the water from the ocean for the clouds to be there and then move out and give water to the vegetation and to the rivers, etc. But the ocean doesn't require that from the clouds. It doesn't require the clouds to rain on it. And so the ocean by its in its own sthana, in its own being, is already completely full. And being completely full, as these rivers move into it, it doesn't become happy or sad. In other words, its being isn't dependent upon the rivers or the rains to fill it up. It's already full and complete. And it has nowhere to go. Right? Its sthana is motionless. Like that, the sthana of your being is completely full. If you think of it, it's really a beautiful example. The sthanam, by sthanam, even that's kind of an odd word to use, but if we just think of awareness itself, of the nature of your being, yourself, which is Brahman, right? Its sthanam is absolutely motionless because there is nothing else. There's nothing, nowhere for it to move because the very being, which is you, is infinite. Right? So it doesn't have any boundaries. It can't be on the right side and then kind of switch, just move over to the left side, you know, or move up or down. So your being is absolute stability. And being one without a second, the conscious being that you are, you can't make it more full. Right? There's nothing that you can add to yourself, in fact, because there's nowhere where yourself is not. So from that standpoint of just the reality of the truth, yourself is the very substance, the very being of all of creation. Now, that's the reality. You are all of creation, in fact. You're the very substance, the very sthanam, the very being which the entire creation enjoys. That's the truth of it. But now as a jiva, part of this projection of the creation as a limited jiva with sense organs and mind and physical body, does this mind enjoy that reality or not? Does it enjoy it? That is its reality. I am Brahman. Whether my mind recognizes that or not, I am that. If my mind doesn't recognize it, then the truth of its being, which is Brahman, the truth of the being of the being of the mind, the conscious being of the mind, the conscious being of the body, which is Brahman, is simply taken by the mind to be it. Right? The mind says, this conscious being that I enjoy is me. That means, as my mind, as the mind changes, I change. Right? As the mind is happy, I am happy. If the mind is sad, I am happy. So there's a total identification that takes place there. When that's the situation, because of ajnanam, because of ignorance, I haven't differentiated out the changeless being from the changing mithya of the mind, actually. The nama-rupa, the changing nature of the mind. I haven't differentiated out that which is the sthanam, my own presence, which is the silent, changeless, absolutely full sthanam being of the mind. If that hasn't been differentiated out, then I am, as a mind, the one who says, I am my mind, this one, this character here, becomes totally, totally dependent on the condition of the mind. Right? I become dependent on the condition of the mind in order to be happy. I have a choice. I have many choices, in fact. And I try to manipulate those choices in my favor. I could be happy. I could be sad. I could be agitated. I could be hurt. I could be depressed. I could be rageful. I could be furious. I could be compassionate. Whatever emotions or feelings the mind is capable of giving, whatever perceptions the mind is capable of giving me, those perceptions and those emotions and feelings I have an identification with, because I haven't differentiated out my own presence, which is not any of those things, which is the very being of all of those things, but not any of those things. It's the self of all of those things, but not any of those things. Why not any of those things? Because those things all come and go, and as they come and go, I remain there exactly in the same way. In fact, this is why meditation, japa, and these things are so useful, because what do you recognize when you slow down your experience? That the very substrate being of all experience is there before, during, and after whatever the experience may be. That yourself, which is so full and complete, never varies. No matter what the experience is there, those experiences have for their very being something which is whole and complete and stable, which you identify as me, as aham. But that one has to be read. The stability of that self has to be recognized. So for an ajnani, the one who is desiring desires, desiring objects of desire, for that person, there is no shanti, really. Maybe little glimpses, little moments. Little moments of shanti. Right? Little moments of peace. Why they say that, though? Why they even say little moments? Is because the moment you do get what you want, your mind, intelligent as it is, will realize that that's going to only be a momentary phenomenon, because there's too many things in the world that can knock that off. And our experience validates that. And so even our moments of shanti have a little, are bordered by a little bit of tension there. But and so that's why they say the kama kami, the one who is desiring out here, let me have this so I can be happy, let me have this so that I can be happy, such a person is totally dependent upon the vritti, a shanta vritti, vritti being a particular way. That particular vritti, that particular thought modification is something that is being produced by your fulfillment of a desire in the world. And so that is all so tenuous. Right? And so that person can never really relax. That isn't true for ajnani. For ajnani, for one who has self-knowledge, the shanti is constant. The shanti is not something susceptible to any type of change, even when the mind is changing. This is why the swatta siddha, the self-evident nature of your being, needs to be recognized. Otherwise, you are dependent on vritti. You're always looking for, even say a spiritual person, your spiritual, whatever that means, your object, you're looking for a spiritual vritti, a spiritual thought modification. I want this thought, this type of thought modification, and there's my shanti. That's just another form of desire. What moksha is, what liberation is recognizing the shanti that's there no matter what the mind is doing. The mind with all of its variety of thoughts is taking place in shanti. The shanti never changes. The shanti is the very nature of your being. And so that's why this differentiation needs to take place. When the differentiation takes place, then your mind, whatever it's doing, whatever its pains are, whatever its thoughts are, whatever it's up to, if it's not peaceful, maybe it's hurt or agitated for this, it rests in peace. It's resting in peace. That Atma, the shanti of the self, is not subject to any type of modification at all. That's why that differentiation is so important. It's nice when your mind is not acting up. No problem, we all agree. But at least if the mind is acting up, let the mind act up in the presence of a self which is stable. That stable self, which is benign by nature, which is whole and complete by nature, holds the mind that is acting up. Then again, as the mind matures in this knowledge, for what reason does it act up? What causes the mind to act up in the first place? Really is, I need this in order to be happy. It's the samsara, it's the ajnana that really gets in a person's way. And so as a person, that projection of projecting my being onto the world and then running after it, that's what causes the mind so much pain. So it takes a while, though. This is what we call the subparibandhika jnanam. It takes a while for the mind to work out its propensity for asking the world to be different. But once one has knowledge, then your knowledge holds that one that is asking the world to be different. The knowledge that has recognized yourself and sits in your own being, right, holds the one that needs this and needs that and needs this and is working out its problems. It's not a problem. You know, you can't ask it, like Swamiji uses this example of, you know, you have this beautiful rosebud. Yeah. And then you look at that bud and you say, I really want to see what this looks like when it blooms. In fact, I want it to bloom right now.
Yeah, right away.
So why don't I just make it bloom? Yeah. Poor thing. But once you recognize yourself, and the kind of the mityatva of this world, as this vision becomes more sturdy for you, more you see it, then you can take care of that maturing mind, because that maturing mind, as well as the mature mind, enjoys the shanti of yourself. If you place the shanti in the self, which is immutable, it's apuryamanam, like the ocean. Nothing ever happens to it. It doesn't go anywhere. So let the mind, in whatever condition it's in, enjoy the shanti of yourself. And then that's freedom. That is freedom. And another thing here in understanding this verse, this kamakami, you know, the one who desires. When you have it, you want to fulfill a desire. You want to fulfill a desire so that you can be happy. Mm-hmm. The happiness that the mind can give you is incomparable, can't be compared to the ananda of the self that is here right now, here experientially present right now. The ananda of the vritti, what we call vritti ananda, means different forms of happiness, joy, bliss. All of these, they're pleasurable experiences, no doubt. But they're just, that's what they are. They're pleasurable experiences. Even to the highest bliss, it's a pleasurable experience that comes and goes. That pleasurable experience takes place in me, the self, right? The one who is the very substance of the whole experience itself. What is the nature of that self? Why is that self called ananda, satchit ananda? What does that word mean? Because the word, that word ananda, in Satchit Ananda, you are existence, you are being itself, which is consciousness, which is ananda, limitlessness, wholeness, fullness, all of these words. Only you, that there's not an object of this type of ananda out here. So you have to recognize what they mean by ananda in, as a label for your own self-experience. And that ananda that is here right now, fully, completely present, experientially present as your own self-evident me, there's nothing that can be improved there. It is wholeness, completeness itself. And so the mind of a jnani, how to say this? There's no comparison between the ananda of my being and the bliss experiences. The bliss experiences are fine. The sorrowful experiences come and go. But none of them compare to the stable presence of me. And so the mind revels in that stable presence that won't come, that can't come and go. It's an immutable presence that won't come and go, that won't change in any way. And so the mind, and it is whole and complete. So it's the very substance of the whole creation. So the mind loves that. Right? Its love is there. So sitting there, then it experiences the world. But it's that becomes its dhanam. Right? That becomes its home base. That becomes where its love, I would say. And so these objects of desire don't compete. They can be here or they cannot be here. There can be happy experiences or there cannot be happy experiences. They don't compete, that's what I'm saying. It's not to put happy experiences down or to glorify unhappy experiences. That isn't the point. Those are what they are. It's just that they don't compete. That they don't compete. Because the mind loves that wholeness of your own being, has recognized it and loves it and sits there. And then enjoys the world from that stalam. So that's what this, so such a person, for that person, all of these objects of desire, like these kamas, all of these objects of desire, they enter that person, right, in the same way that the rivers and waters will enter the ocean. How the ocean doesn't change. Like that, there's no change in me. And in fact, there never is any change in me. So that's something that's experiential. It just has to be experiential, self-evident. It has to be differentiated out. And if the nature of yourself is ananda, right, then these objects that are coming and going, these objects of desires and different states of mind even, that are coming and going and changing, the mind recognizing none of them affect me in any way. And so that's an incredible security for the mind, because the mind recognizes then that I am totally free. And in my freedom, the mind basks. The mind basks in my freedom. The mind is always changing, right? But it has recognized that itself is totally free. See what that is? So that's the moksha. So now, having given that example, he's going to these next last two verses, he's going to kind of tie up the whole chapter here, in this whole discussion on the sthita pragna.
Have you ever heard
Vihaya kaman yasaravan, Vihaya kaman yasaravan, Pumans charati nisprahaha, Pumans charati nisprahaha, Nirmamo nirahankaraha, Nirmamo nirahankaraha, Sashantim atigacchati, Sashantim atigacchati. Vihaya kaman yas yaha sarvan puman charati nisprahaha, Nirmamaha nirahankaraha, Saha Shantim atigacchati. Vihaya is an indeclinable past participle, having given up. Kaman, accusative plural, desires. Sarvan kaman, all desires. Accusative plural. Vihaya, having given up. Kaman, sarvan, all desires. Yaha, he who. He who, having given up, sought kaman, sarvan. Actually, it's yaha, puman. Which person? Puman is a nominative singular. Which person, which man? Yaha, kaman. Who, having given up all desires, chetati nispraha, the person who, the person, puman, yaha, who, vihaya sarvan kaman, the person who, having given up all desires, chetati, moves about, nispraha, spraha means attachment, desire, nis, without, completely free of attachment, free of desire. So that person, having given up all desires, moves about free of attachment, free of desire, niramamaha, without a sense of mine. Mama means mine. Nir, without mine. Without mineness. Niramama. Niramamaha. Again, nominative singular. Nir ahankaraha, without a sense of I, limited I, means the ahankara. Without that sense of ahankara, I'll explain that in a minute, but with a sense of ahankara where the ego, the ahankara, lands on the body, mind, sense organs, or something limited instead of landing on atma, on the self. So without that ahankara that takes the self to be limited. So nirmamaha, nir ahankaraha, saha, he, shantim adigachati. He gains shanti, peace. Okay. So,
is this a famous verse?
No. Not like the other two. This verse, there's a lot of verses like this in the Bhagavad Gita, though, and it's a very thorough, very complete, and it's a descriptive verse of the jnani, really. So, really, another way of saying this, person who's giving up is really being free of. You can't give up objects of desire unless you're full. That's like saying it's perfectly all right with me not to be happy. Right? So that's not all right. If you're not happy, by happy I don't mean kind of a pet happy. I mean whole, where I feel all is well with me. You know, that it's what Swamiji sometimes call in the Shastra, they'll call the alam buddhi. The alam buddhi is that thought, that sense of that notion or that idea that it's enough. Like, for instance, if you've eaten enough. Right, in India they always come and offer more and more. No, it's enough, I'm fine. I'm full, you know. I don't want any more. Or I've slept enough. I can't sleep anymore, I've slept enough, I'm ready to get up. I said, well, it's just enough. So what if that alam buddhi is always there? It's, no, I'm fine. No, I'm fine, no, I don't need anything. You're not just saying it, that's just how you feel. You are fine. All is well with me. That's that alam buddhi. Okay, so having given up all of these desires, why? Because what the mind is always seeking, it's found. That's why. I'm not really seeking an object. I think I'm seeking an object. That's part of the notion. But actually, I'm not seeking an object. I'm seeking the happiness or the state of well-being that object or person or situation is meant to give me. The instant that object lets me down, or that job or that person doesn't fulfill its obligations to me, which is to make me happy, right, then I no longer want that thing. Right? Because I'm seeking the ananda, I'm seeking the wholeness, that all is well, that sense, all is well with me, that I am whole and complete. And I use the fulfillment of desires to give me that feeling, even though I get it just in momentary glimpses. At least I get it. Why do I get it really? It's because when you fulfill a desire, for that moment, For that moment, your mind is desireless and doesn't want anything. And so at that moment, it's relaxed. So when the mind is relaxed, then the self that you are, right, overwhelms the mind. The mind isn't giving any, opposing emotions. There's no imposing emotions. And in the silence of the mind, the ananda of the self can reflect in that mind in such a way that you can have varying degrees of bliss. And we all know we like that. Yeah. Then we feel happy with that. Now, what about, so I use desires in that way. How is it that I could not use desires in that way? How could I give up all desire? All desire, you know? I would have to have fulfilled the state. I would have to be happy, right? If I'm not happy, then I desire to be happy. If I desire to be happy, then I have to do something to fulfill that desire, right? So the person who is free of that, free of all desires, right, is the person that has fulfilled that desire of what they're actually seeking, which is my own ananda. And so that's the condition for ajnani, that the desires are fulfilled in the ananda, which is myself. Such a person goes about, walks about, having free of all those desires, walks about in the world as somebody who is desireless, right? Desireless and without a sense of niramama, this is mine and this is mine and this is mine. I must have this, I must have this, I must have that. You can say this is mine because this chair is mine, this table is mine, these are all things are mine. But it's a burnt seed. The desire is a burnt seed. The ownership is like a, it's called a dagda bija. It's bodhita. It's an as though this is mine and this is mine and this is mine. Because from another standpoint, all of this is mine. From another standpoint, all of this is me. What part isn't me? So this mamatvam, this is mine and this is mine and this is mine, this is mine, becomes held by a different vision. Right? And that different vision is in fact a recognition of an underlying truth. Here you are as a jiva. So let me try to make this a little realistic for you. You're a jiva. There's this level of reality here, a jiva's individual, working in this world, right? Trying to make a go of it. Right? You know? And I've got my friends and family and my job and my income and all of the things and taking care of my health and et cetera. There's thousands of things that we're managing. And we have our home and things that we have in our home. These are all my things. My things and my friends and my job and my car and my bank account and my. So that's on one level. But there's another level of reality that trumps that. Even though all of that is taking place. All of that is taking place. It's not like for the jnani, all of a sudden we pretend that that's not that's not what we're doing. You know, it's like in Panchadashi, you'll see in this chapter 7, the Vidyaranya, the author, makes fun of this type of thing, makes fun of people who will say, you know, the body is walking and the mind is thinking. Yeah, and my speech is, the speech that you're hearing coming from my mouth is what is actually talking. And it's only my eyes are seeing. So what if I talk like that all the time? My body is going to walk to the store now. He makes fun of it. He makes fun of that. You know? Because even though it's true, and both realities are there, you're very aware of that, but it's bodhita. So we're just playing the game here, and this is what how we experience it also. I experience I'm walking to the store, and I also experience that I'm never changing in any way. When I say I'm walking to the store, what am I talking about? This body, sense organs, mind are walking to the store. That's all I mean by that. But does that mean that my ahankara, the aham thought, is landing on the body as me? No. The I thought is landing on Brahman, on my being as me. Say my mind is agitated. Is my ahankara, is the aham lying on the mind, or now I am agitated? Or is it resolved into me? That's the difference. But am I going to say, my mind is agitated? The mind is agitated? I might. But do you see what I'm saying? There's bodhita. Bodhita means this reality that you're living, the me-mind reality that you're living in, is negated by something else that you know. And what you know is that in fact this whole creation that you experience, and you experience a little piece of it, right? There's an infinite creation here that we call Ishvara. It's infinite. But as a jiva, you experience a little parcel of this infinite creation through your sense organs. But what do you know is that actually the body, the mind, the sense organs, the moods, the emotions, the thoughts, the friends, the room, the house, the bank account, the money, all of it are part of a whole, of which this body, mind, sense organs are a part. Everything, every part of the jiva means that the jiva, in fact, is Brahman. But every part that has this misidentification, the body, the mind, the sense organs, the moods, the emotions, the ahankara, the whole thing is part and parcel of this whole. It belongs, this belongs to this whole. And this whole, and I experience part of the whole, right? So this whole, which this jiva belongs to, has me for itself. I am the self of this whole. The conscious being that I am is the self of this whole. And that being the case, what is mine? If I said, what is mine here? Nothing is mine because all of it is me. See, that's the difference. So nothing is mine because there's nothing that's not me. It's all me. So there's no room for a mine. When you say nirahankara, there's no limited, from that position, there is no limited self. The ahankara just means that the I thought that you have is hooked on to something which you are not. Like the ahankara, the I is superimposed on your mind. I am the mind. It's superimposed on your moods, superimposed on your thoughts, superimposed on your body, superimposed on your sense organs. That's what makes it ahankara. Right? So if it's a bodhita ahankara, it means it's superimposed, but we know it's not true because, I mean, I can act like I am the body, I am walking to the store, I am thinking, I am happy, I am upset. That's all bodhita. It's all the negated ahankara. Why is it negated? Because I know who I am. And where does the I land for me? The I sits in me, in myself, my changeless self. That's where my I, that's the home for me. Right? And then that I sitting in sustain home in myself, labeling myself, that being a reality, all of this reality takes place also. Do you see what I'm saying? Yourself is swetta siddha. Your being, the changelessness of your being, it's always the same. There's no experience in the universe. You're not capable of any experience that is any way away from that changeless substrate being of yourself. That's your experience. That's been recognized. And now in that recognition, in that reality, you're walking around. That's the bodhita. You're walking around talking, thinking, doing, all of the while not talking, not thinking, not doing. You see that? Both are absolutely true. You're not thinking, you're not doing, you're not changing, you're not happy, you're not sad, you're just you. and there's nothing away from you. That's your ongoing recognition, because you're that yourself is svatthasiddha, is self-evident. And that being the ongoing recognition, you're walking and talking and carrying on. You're carrying on in the presence, in the silent presence of yourself. So that's a very neat thing. That being so, you can say, niramama, where's the me and mine, nirahankara, where is it? It's really not there. And so, to the degree that it's there, just in your day-to-day vyavahara, your day-to-day activity, to the degree that it's there, just in day-to-day vyavahara, it's bodhita. It's sublated by your knowledge.
So if the tiger shows up, there's still an element of it. You know enough to walk away from the tiger.
Yeah. Hopefully. So, here. So, vihaya kaman yasaravan pumans charati nispraha nirmamo nirahankaraha sashantim adhigacchati. That person gains shanti. Again, it's the same, repeating the same. You gain the shanti in the recognition of yourself. Who gains the shanti? There's two ways to understand this. The shanti is your own swarupa. Okay? The nature of the conscious being that you are, the me, that is shanti. And it's invariable. It's immutable. It never changes in any way. So the being that you are is shanti, and it's self-evident. So there's the shanti of your self-evident presence. That is that shanti, that presence that is there, whatever the thought of the mind, in the mind. It's one level. Another level. The mind itself, which is so subject to so much worry and agitation, the mind itself gains shanti. Because the ananda that it's been seeking in the world, which is so... always subject to change, it's so insecure just by its nature, that problem is solved. And so the mind now gains liberation. Right? It gains liberation. The mind never becomes liberated in a sense, because the mind itself is always subject to change. Right? It's never constant just by its very nature, by its very swarupa. But the mind becomes liberated of so much sorrow and so much dukkha, because the causes for the dukkha, causes for the sorrow, have been eliminated. And so the mind itself enjoys a natural shanti, because it relies on and basks in the shanti of the self. Its attachment is to the self, not to... The attachment is to Brahman, right? The attachment is to what is there, what is the truth, actually. The attachment is to the truth. And then with everything else is taking place in that truth. And so the mind enjoys the strength and the peace of the self. And so that's how it attains its shanti. It can't attain shanti in the world, because there is no peace in the world. Right? The world, that's why, you know, if you think, when Krishna gave Ishvara the whole vision of the Vishnu Swarupa, the whole Swarupa, Krishna gave Arjuna that vision. It was absolutely terrifying to see, because the entire infinite creation is just eating itself. You know, everything, birth and death, birth and death, birth and death. Just a magnificent, infinite display of birth and death. I mean, it's magnificent and infinite, but you don't want to be one of those in it.
Not me.
Dude, you know. So if you say you're just like the just identified, you'll see this in Panchadashi, well, first chapter of Panchadashi. He really has a beautiful way of describing. Ishvara is the one who's just attached to the sattva. The identification is only with the sattva, sattva guna, that which reflects the intelligence. There's no attachment at all to any object, any register tamas, no attachment to an object in the creation. Similar, I've used the example as if you have a dream at night, sometimes you'll be identified with a character in the dream. Then you're attached to the rajas and tamas aspect in the dream. But there's sometimes when you're not identified with anything in the dream. You're not, you haven't taken a character in the dream. There could be still many characters in the dream, but you're not identified with one. So you just are the whole. That's identification with just the sattva. The whole infinite creation is known to you. That's Ishwara's Hiranyagarbha. That's the Hiranyagarbha sthanam. There's no identification with any object within that creation. And so from that standpoint, actually, I don't remember where I even got into that. It was nice while
it made sense.
There was some book there, I'll have to listen to the tape. Okay. Anyway, for the jnani, the ahankara resolves into the atma, and that's always the underlying reality. Oh, I know what I was saying. There can't be any freedom or shanti and identification within the object and the creation. Then I brought in Krishna giving that whole swarupa, Bhagavan swarupa, to Arjuna, and how frightening it is, because there is nothing but continual change. Or continual change means infinite birth and death. And so everything here is subject to loss and perishable. And so to the degree that you need it, any given thing in the creation, to that degree, that will impact on your shanti, right? Of the mind. So that's why vairagya becomes so important. And shraddha and ishwara, all of these things, devotion to ishwara, all of these things, are ways to help the mind give up that attachment to, I need this to be happy, I need this to be happy. Anyway. I'm done. Let's stop. We'll do this to the last verse next week. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti
Hari Om Shri Guru Jonah
Hari Om.